It's 2:05 on the John Phillips Show, Talk Radio 790 KABC, broadcasting live in exile from the Morongo Casino Resort and Spa Living Room Studios, and it's time to fully reopen the state of California for business. Mr. Randy Wang has the day off. He'll be back with us on Monday after a nice and relaxing weekend. Actually, who am I trying to kid? He's going to be at the airport. He's going to be miserable. But don't worry, there's a silver lining to that cloud. I'll be golfing twice this weekend, and I'll be just fine. 800-222-KABC is the phone number, 1-800-222-5222. The theme of today's show is the ballot, as the ballots have gone out in the mail. If you have questions about your ballot, questions about some of the races, questions about the candidates, whatever the case may be, go ahead and give us a call at 800-222-KABC, 1-800-222-5222, and we'll try to work in as many calls as we can the rest of the hour. But first, it is a pleasure to welcome to the program the co-host of the Too Many Lawyers podcast, which you can download wherever you download your favorite podcasts, and KABC legal analyst, Royal Oaks. Royal, welcome.
Hey, thanks. Happy Friday, John.
Happy Friday to you. Let's start out by talking about this horrible fire in Orange County that has already burned down 20 homes in Laguna Niguel. We have these fires in California all the time. We don't have an official cause yet for the fire, but we do know that Southern California Edison was having issues with some of their faulty equipment down there right before the fire started. If, in fact, it turns out to be Southern California Edison's fault, this wouldn't be the first time a major utility in California was caught setting fires, as PG&E was held responsible, criminally so, for starting fires in Northern California, including the fire that burned down the entire town of Paradise and another town as well. What do you make of this, and what happens to homeowners if their home is burned down by a fire started by a utility company?
Yeah, great questions. Unfortunately, this is a long-running problem, as you're suggesting there. So what happened in this case, the fires in the canyon between Laguna Niguel and Laguna Beach. So what happened is that on Wednesday evening, Southern California Edison reported to the government some unspecified electrical circuit activity. So we don't know what that means. We do know that the utilities have to go to the government whenever there's any kind of an odd circumstance that might have contributed to a fire. It doesn't necessarily mean that Southern California Edison caused it, but they did have to report this. But, you know, it can lead to some major repercussions. Just last year, the Public Utilities Commission approved a settlement of $500 million in fines and penalties for Edison's role in half a dozen wildfires over the last several years. So we don't know what happened. 90% of fires, we're told, are caused by human activity, including electric company activity. And California law says the utilities have a duty of care to everybody. You have to act in a reasonable manner to prevent fires, like complying with federal and state fire regulations, like installing electric and gas equipment properly. Did they test their equipment for high wind conditions? Were their employees properly trained and qualified? All of these things would be grounds for either the government going against a utility or, as you suggest, if homeowners lose their property, if it turns out that the utility dropped the ball, then they're going to face civil liability and occasionally even criminal liability. I mean, the campfire was the deadliest fire in California history, 85 people dead 3 or 4 years ago. PG&E was found to be at fault because they had a 100-year-old power pole that should have been replaced. So there are a lot of legal options here.
It seems like the public has two different reactions, one to public utilities, who you wouldn't think would be sympathetic, and one to everyone else. If at Disneyland, they know a ride is not up to code and someone gets beheaded on Space Mountain, the public is going to come unglued that Disneyland didn't fix that and someone died because of it, and it's going to generate a lot of negative attention for the theme park. Yet it seems like when the utilities start a fire that burns down homes or burns people alive or burns animals to death alive, the public just says, well, they have power lines and we live in a windy place. What are you going to do?
Yeah, you know, maybe part of that is that whereas we don't really feel like we're part of the Disney family or Uber or Starbucks or whatever, when we get the bill from the utility companies, and they may be the people we love to hate, but, you know, it's our electric company and it's our water company. And so, yeah, I think there is generally a reluctance to automatically knee-jerk blame them. But, you know, you can go for lawsuits. These so-called inverse condemnation suits against utility companies are possible, where just as, you know, if they have to tear down your house for the freeway and they condemn your house and they give you some money, they will be forced, the utilities, to give you just compensation for the value of destroyed property. And the kicker here, John, is that you don't have to prove that the utility was at fault in this situation. It's a so-called strict liability deal where if the injury occurs and you don't necessarily know that the utility was responsible, you don't have to prove it. If it was on their watch and if they had something to do with it, even if they weren't technically negligent, you can get the big bucks. So, I mean, that's why experts go out there and they figure out, you know, were the power poles damaged? Did they ignore equipment repair requirements? Did they, you know, update wooden power poles to steel towers? All of these things are going to be examined, put under a microscope to figure out who may have caused this most recent fire.
Until PG&E was held criminally liable for starting those fires in Northern California, I didn't know it was possible to hold a company, a corporation, criminally liable for their activities. Now, while the judge and the jury did determine that they were criminally liable, none of their executives actually did any time. How common is it to hold a corporation criminally liable?
It's really rare, and it isn't just in the context of the utilities that we're talking about. It's any corporation, you know, the Enron scandals or any kind of corporate malfeasance. The prosecutors always have the option to say to the court, hey, we're not only going to charge the CEO and the executive vice president, but doggone it, it was top to bottom. We're going to charge the corporation itself. We're going to basically shut it down. Generally, prosecutors don't want to do that because it feels like they're punishing shareholders and innocent employees and so on. If it's just super serious, yeah, they'll go for the nuclear option and go against the corporation. But in general, prosecutors like to have a villain's face, the CEO, the director of accounting who was siphoning and so on. And that way, you know, they don't have to necessarily go against the company itself.
You mentioned that human activity starts 90% of the fires that we experience here in California. One of those activities that seems to start a bunch of fires are homeless encampments. In fact, the fire department put out a list of encampments that they say are fire hazards in Los Angeles County. Let's say your house doesn't burn down because of a fire that was started by Southern California Edison, but it burns down because of a fire that was started by a homeless encampment. Is there anyone as a homeowner you can sue for your damages if the homeless started?
Well, you could sue everybody in the homeless encampment, but your damages would be a couple of dozen shopping carts filled with some really cool stuff, maybe. But no, you're kind of out of luck. And that's why you got to somehow figure out that there's a deep pocket. And, of course, there, in some cases, there just aren't any deep pockets. The people responsible, maybe, are the governmental entities that refused to clear out the homeless encampment. And that's where, you know, you get this unfortunate nexus of politics and law and you know, trying to maintain public safety and health. If people are so reluctant to bulldoze the homeless encampments, that it basically just gets worse and worse, you know, and crime emanates, public health issues, fires and so on. You know, we've seen forest fires caused by illegal camping. It's just a real shame that some politicians that don't have the guts to do what's necessary to solve the most visible problem staring us all in the face in L.A. I mean, maybe now it's inflation when you look up by the 76 ball and see you're paying $6.50 a gallon for gasoline. Maybe that's as visible as homelessness. But I think the homeless encampments, that's still the number one issue on people's minds.
So if you're a homeowner and your house burns down in a fire due to human activity, from a point of view of recovering your losses, who do you want to burn down your house?
probably Rick Caruso because he's so rich. Yeah, I mean, you want somebody with insurance. And, you know, Rick is so busy with the campaign, I don't think he's going to be burning anybody's house down. But, yeah, it's the old story. You got to have a deep pocket, and if you don't have a personal deep pocket, then everybody's got insurance for most all significant activity in their personal and commercial lives, and sometimes those insurance policies will kick in. That's about all you can do, because sometimes stuff happens and there actually is no legal remedy, but you know, creative lawyers try to find one nonetheless.
We're speaking with Royal Oaks, KABC legal analyst and co-host of the Too Many Lawyers podcast, which you can download wherever you download your favorite podcast. You mentioned Rick Caruso. One of the groups that's supporting Rick Caruso in his quest to be mayor of Los Angeles is the LA Police Protective League, the union representing LAPD officers. They have an ad that's up and running that's tying Karen Bass to the corruption at the University of Southern California, their Department of Social Work, Mark Ridley Thomas, who's been indicted, and his son, who's got all kinds of problems as well. She, in response, is very upset at this negative ad, this hit piece that's coming after her. So she issued a cease and desist letter to all of the television and radio stations that are playing that ad. Does she have a chance at actually getting them to pull the ad?
Well, she does, as a result of the fact that the police union is a third party. If it were Rick Caruso running an ad and he had stuff that Karen Bass thinks, you know, that's wrong, then she'd have a harder time suing, because the federal approach to this is we don't censor, no governmental entity should censor ads. But here we have a police union, as you say, they're paying for this ad that says Karen Bass got free USC tuition and then she voted to give millions of dollars in taxpayer funds to USC. The duty to check and make sure that the ad is not a big fat lie does fall to the TV station once the cease and desist order goes out with respect to a third party ad like the police union. So at this point, all the stations that are making a lot of great money on political ads, they got to go to their lawyers and say, whoa, wait a minute now. Tell us, is there anything defamatory in it here? Is it false? Now, of course, because Karen Bass is a public figure, she still has to prove malice. She has to show that everybody knew for sure that this was a lie they were peddling or that they were broadcasting. But yeah, short answer is she's got a chance at winning. And more realistically, though, I think she just wants the stations to sort of back down and stop running it or get them to change the ad as opposed to trying to play out the string in court. I mean, the law aside, the political issues, do you really want voters thinking about the allegations against you? I mean, even if Karen Bass wins, gets some sort of a protective order, we're talking about it. A jillion people have said along the way, hey, did you hear about the terrible things Karen Bass did? And we're talking about it in part because she made it a big issue in the news.
Well, as someone who spent a portion of their life working in the broadcast world, I'm sure you agree that the last thing television stations, radio stations want to do is get involved in the editing process of political ads, because every negative political ad, which these stations make a ton of money off of, says someone's a bad parent, someone's a bad mayor, someone's a crook, someone's a thief, someone's whatever negative thing you can come up with, fill in the blank, is a negative ad extraordinaire. That's what they do. That's the point of negative ads. And if all of a sudden television stations have to nitpick this detail or that detail or not run negative ads, it's going to impact their bottom line. They don't want any part of that.
You're absolutely right. And that's why this kind of a cease and desist order thing almost never works, because it's pretty rare that an ad contains an absolutely provable lie. You know, candidate Smith was dishonorably discharged from the Marines. Well, it either happened or it didn't, and if it didn't happen, then the cease and desist order is appropriate, and it'll be a good result there. But for the vast majority of these ads that are negative, that may have some insinuations, good luck. As you say, you can't have the TV stations get involved and, well, let's tone this down, you know, let's censor it a little bit, let's vet it. It just doesn't work that way. Ultimately, the voters are exposed to this stuff. They'll hear the feedback and the blowback if the ads didn't contain truthful allegations. And then that way, you know, the liar will pay the price, hopefully, at the ballot box. But in terms of getting the courts involved, it's generally not a good idea.
The first hour, I took a call from a listener who asked about the judicial races that are appearing on the ballot. Many judicial races are being decided on this June ballot. And the layperson, the person who's not a litigant, who deals with these judges on a daily basis, they have no idea if these people are good judges or bad judges or corrupt judges or whatever the case may be. As someone who appears in court and has to work with these judges, how does it feel to know that people who have no knowledge, no ability to find out any accurate information, get to decide who is the judge in your case?
You know, it's really frustrating, I think, both for lawyers and non-lawyers, because I know for decades, you know, I've looked over the ballot, and a lot of times people who know I'm a lawyer will say, oh, Royal, what do you think about Judge Schmedlap and so on? And the problem is, I mean, I appeared a lot in front of the L.A. Superior Court, dozens, scores of judges over the decades, but there are 250 or so of them at any given time. And as a result, even if you're really active, you just don't have a handle on it. And then there are scores, they think, of federal judges in the Central District here in Southern California as well. You know, lawyers have kind of an advantage because there's a legal newspaper called the Daily Journal, and they have a profile. Every single time a new judge takes the bench, the Daily Journal publishes a really extensive profile about this person. And, of course, the ABA and the State Bar, they have ratings. So if you want to do your homework and dig, you're going to find out if people have a good reputation. At the end of the day, who's going to do that, though? These names are all just so anonymous to most of us, even though, you know, judges make huge life and death decisions, enormous impact on communities. But, yeah, it's frustrating that it's almost impossible to make a really well-informed decision on judges on the ballot.
Well, and also when you have judges' names on the ballot, it doesn't say if they're a Republican or Democrat. I think it does list their occupation on there. But I think what people do is they look at it and they go, we'll go with the woman on this one. We'll go with the Mexican on the next one. We'll go with this person. I used to know someone with that name.
So that's absolutely true. So what you have is a deal where a judge on a ballot has an automatic a huge advantage. I mean, talk about the power of the incumbency. If it says judge and the next person down, you know, they run a pizza shop, with very rare exceptions, it's just not going to happen. I remember after 9/11, there was a sitting judge with a great reputation. Her name was Dzintra Janez, but it sounded sort of faintly Eastern European, and there was some xenophobia, I guess, going on because a lady who was a lawyer, but basically she owned a bagel shop in Santa Monica, she runs against Dzintra Janez. And because the bagel shop owner, it was like her name was, you know, Chamberlain or something, sounds like, oh yeah, it sounds judge like to me, she beat Dzintra Janez. So next time around, the governor, who knew that she'd kind of been ripped off, he reappointed her, but she lost her seniority and so on. It's just a shame because, you know, people are going to sometimes vote based on emotional things.
Absolutely. Royal Oaks, KABC legal analyst and co-host of the Too Many Lawyers podcast. You can download that wherever you download your favorite podcasts. Royal, thanks so much for stopping by and have a wonderful weekend.
You too. Thanks, John.
It's 2:24 on the John Phillips Show. If you have a question about your ballot, I'm going to take more of your calls. We have a little over, well, let's say 36 minutes, the rest of the show. If you have a question about any of the races that I talked about or didn't talk about, feel free to give us a call at 800-222-KABC, 1-800-222-5222. I know a lot of you have many questions about this June election, so feel free to ask away. Ever wonder why your house gets so chilly in the winter or hot in the summer? Well, it's time to take a good hard look at your windows. Beautify your home, improve its curb appeal, and make it more energy efficient. You need to talk to Gene and Karen at Window World. Gene and Karen at Window World have been providing customers with high-quality, custom-made, energy-saving windows for over 25 years. All their windows, whether you want a slider, bay, picture window, whatever, All their windows are affordable, functional, and beautiful. And Window World stands behind their products for life. That's right, life. Window World will show you how beautifying your home's exterior while making it incredibly energy efficient has never been more affordable. They'll install 6 Energy Star windows for as little as $77 a month, or 5 Energy Star windows and a patio door for only $52.99, or as little as $106 a month. And Window World offers zero down and interest-free financing options. They make beautiful new windows affordable. To learn more, give them a call at 855-25-WORLD. That's 855-25-WORLD, or find them online at windowworldsocal.com. On the John Phillips Show, Talk Radio 790 KABC. If you want to email the show, you can do so at johnnydontlikeshow@gmail.com. That's johnnydontlikeshow@gmail.com. We're going through the ballot today on the show, as ballots have been mailed. If you're a registered voter, you should have received it by now. And if you haven't, then maybe your neighbor's voting twice. If you have a question about the ballot, give me a call at 800-222-KABC, 1-800-222-5222. You can ask about any of the races that we've talked about before, the candidates, maybe something I didn't mention, anything you want to know about the ballot. Give me a call, 800-222-KABC, 1-800-222-5222. In the meantime, 790-KABC welcomes the B-52s, Farewell Tour, with KC and the Sunshine Band at the Honda Center on November the 5th. Tickets are on sale right now at Ticketmaster.com, but right now, caller number 9 at 888-790-5222. That's 888-790-5222. Gets a pair of tickets to the show. All of this furnished by our friends at Live Nation. Good luck dialing. It's 2:36 on the John Phillips Show, Talk Radio 790 KABC. The weekend is almost here. It's so close you can taste it. And listening to Jimmy Buffett music, it tastes like a margarita with rocks and salt, doesn't it? 800-222-KABC is the phone number, 1-800-222-5222. The ballots are out and about. Many of you are filling them out as we speak. I know many of you have a lot of questions about it. If I can be here to answer your questions, I'd love to do that at 800-222-KABC, 1-800-222-5222. Let's begin with Brandon in Whittier. Brandon, you're on KABC. Hello.
Hey, John, how's it going?
Good.
So you were just on with Royal Oaks and discussing how to determine whether or not judges are effective or not. And there's a website that I found a few years ago called judgevoterguide.com. And it's a nationwide website. They distribute, it's an organization that distributes questionnaires to judges. And based on their judicial record their questionnaire, if they return it, they give them a rating of either activist or constructionist. And so you can kind of base your decision making off of that. They, you know, some of the judges, it's not even like, you know, it's a choice between the lesser of two evils, and they'll kind of differentiate that, you know, versus, you know, I mean, you may not get everything you want, but based off of the other judges they're running against, you can kind of vote based off of who might be better than the worst candidate. And they have them for L.A. Court, Superior Court, and other states as well.
Is that Craig Huey's website? Is it based out of Torrance?
I don't remember. It's been I bookmarked it, and I've had it for years, and I always go back every election cycle. And I recommend it to every friend I know trying to get the word out because, yeah, you're right. The judges, nobody knows about them and how they vote.
What was the name of the website again?
JudgeVoterGuide.com.
Judge. I don't want the Judds. Lots of news about them.
Yeah.
Typed at the
JudgeVoterGuide.com.
VoterGuide.com. Let's see if this is Craig Huey. If it's Craig Huey, that's the one I'd pay attention to.
Yeah.
Okay. I don't see it on here. I'll take a look at it. Maybe in the next segment I'll have an answer to that question. Thank you so much for the call. I appreciate that.
Yeah, no problem. Have a great day.
Okay, let's move on and welcome Matt. Matt, you're on KABC. Hello.
John Phillips, it's a real honor to be on your show. Long-time listener, first-time caller, sir. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for calling.
Great. My name's Matt Smith. I'm the only conservative running to replace Mike Bonin in CD11. I'm a U.S. Army combat veteran, and I have a treatment-first plan for the homeless. I don't believe subsidized housing on the west side might make sense, and I'm going to look for permanent, affordable solutions in more affordable, less dense areas. I think we have incentivized this behavior, and I'm the only Republican running to replace Mike Bonin. And we have signs all over town. They canceled debates because they didn't want to hear our message. But we got a real team going, and we're really going to make this happen. So I appreciate you giving me a couple seconds to just kind of get my message out there.
Now, has Meth Bonin anointed his successor?
Oh, gosh. Well, Aaron Darling did. Yeah, Aaron Darling is the successor. The LA Times and Mike Bonin have got on board with him. I've been calling Aaron Darling Mike Bonin 2.0 in every debate. But honestly, there are six other candidates that are almost just as bad as him. Lots of special interest money. I just got a mailer from somebody today, and it's got over $1 million worth of financing behind it. And it's for some apartment group. And it's the leading candidate in the race. So there's all this money being spent to elect the same type of people, and I'm the only one that's any different. And it's been hard to get my message out there, but we're doing it, and it's really happening now. So, you know, I appreciate you giving me just a couple seconds here.
Have you lived down there a while?
It's way different.
Have you lived down there a while?
I'm born and raised in Westchester. I'm an Army combat veteran. I left L.A. because I couldn't afford to live in L.A. This is back in 1992. So we're looking at 3 decades of unaffordability. I came back in 96. I still couldn't afford to live on the West Side. I had to struggle. I'm a delivery driver. I did that for a number of years. I was an account executive for a dental supply company for a bunch of years. I'm a small business owner, and I'm here to represent the homeowners, the business owners, the renters, and the people of District 11, not these outside interest groups that want to just build, build, build.
What happened to him? And I say that because he used to work for Bill Rosendahl, who was the councilman before him. And Bill Rosendahl was not a crackpot. And Mike Bonin essentially ran that office. And Bill Rosendahl had a very aggressive form of cancer at the end. And Meth Bonin was essentially in charge of that office. And then after Rosendahl died, Bonin was able to get himself elected to that seat. And he wasn't insane at the very beginning. And then it's like something happened where it was Invasion of the Body Snatchers. And his mind just got sucked out of his head by an alien. And he turned into a complete lunatic. Was he in an automobile accident? What happened? Ayahuasca?
Well, definitely Bill Rosendahl was amazing. And we thought Bonin was going to be great. I got to tell you this, though. I think what happens is we elect these politicians and so much goes on behind these doors. And there's so much pressure and there's so much money at stake that they just kind of go off and, you know, they listen to this person, listen to that person. Look, I spent 5 months in Mogadishu during Operation Restore Hope. I drove around that city as a truck driver. On my best days, I'd get yelled at and rocks thrown at my truck. On the worst days, I'd get shot at. I can handle pressure. And the only reason I'm doing this, and look, I've never thought about running for office, but I'm doing this because I know I can handle the pressure and get behind those doors and make decisions for our community. And I don't believe anyone else is going to do that. So when you ask me what happened to Bonin, I think he caved to the pressure. He went with that compassion sickness, which is what a lot of people lead with. I call what we see on the streets radical hospitality. It's like whatever goes, goes. Don't tell anyone they can't do anything. And just, you know, they just keep letting it happen.
Well, if you're used to being shot at, Los Angeles is a good place for you.
Yeah, I'm definitely at home here, but I'd like to have a little bit less of that on the west side. I'm a big back the blue person. I believe we need to tackle those false narratives that you mentioned on your show from time to time. That whole thing about the police have become the bad guys and the criminals are the victims. We got to get behind law enforcement and start supporting them and get that morale back up. And I challenge everybody in these debates to say that. And they wouldn't say it. And then they ended up canceling the last 2 debates on me because I was saying all this stuff. And it got frustrating. So I'm really appreciating this, you know, the ability to get this message out there.
Okay, last question before you go. Where were the roads smoother, here or in Mogadishu?
Oh, God, I guess it depends on what side of the west side you go to.
All right, what's the campaign website again?
It's letsfixla.com. Letsfixla.com. I'm the only candidate not spending your money currently. I rejected the matching funds. I spent $25,000 on my own campaign out of my own pocket. I did not loan the money. I donated it because I stand behind what I believe.
And what was your name one more time?
Matt Smith with one T. M-A-T Smith. If you live on the west side, you've seen my signs. We can make it happen. Don't throw your vote away on another progressive. Let's make this happen. And thank you, John. I love your show.
All right. Thank you so much for the call, Matt. I appreciate it. If you have a question about the ballot, give me a call at 800-222-KABC, 1-800-222-5222. It's 2:48 on this Jimmy Buffett Friday on the John Phillips Show, Talk Radio 790 KABC. I want to get to a question that was asked of me the first hour by a caller at the end of the hour, and I didn't get a chance to expand on it. She asked me how I'm voting for the U.S. Senate. This is another one of these races, like lieutenant governor and insurance commissioner, where Republicans don't have a chance. And they don't have a chance because the Senate is split 50-50, and we are a heavily Democratic state. So I don't see Democrats crossing party lines and voting for a Republican. We've had a very difficult time electing a Republican to the U.S. Senate in this state, going all the way back to the 80s. I think Pete Wilson was the last Republican to win a U.S. Senate seat here. John Seymour was appointed to fill out his term, the former mayor of Anaheim, after Wilson was elected to be governor in California in 1990. However, we still get to vote. And in that race, I'll be voting for a guy by the name of Mark Moiser. Mark is an attorney who works for Harmeet Dhillon's law firm. We have Harmeet on the show all the time. And she is, of course, one of the top attorneys here in the state of California, a very bright lady. And I figure that if you work for Harmeet Dhillon, you have to have a brain in your head. So I'll be voting for him. I also think if lightning were to strike, he would be a hilarious addition to the U.S. Senate. Now, I don't know if any of you have ever met Mark Moiser before, but I've met him on a few different occasions. And I don't know if he still does this, but the times that I have met him, his fashion ideas are a little out there. The closest thing I can describe his suits to you, and he's always in a suit when I see him, is he dresses like a black preacher from a certain era. Maybe like the 1980s, where you'll have a purple shirt, and then you'll have the collar be a different color, and the cuffs be a different color, and then a loud tie. And every time I'd see him, he wears a different shirt that has a different color that's similar to the last one. And I think to myself, that's a man with confidence right there. Very confident. And I was actually at one of the Republican state conventions once. I was covering it for the Orange County Register for my column. And I never hang out with the pack of press. I always kind of do my own thing. Because when you're off on your own, sometimes you pick up on things that other people don't. So I was at the back of the room. And that particular cycle, he was running to be Secretary of State. And he was able to get the Republican Party endorsement. And he was very happy. And after he got the endorsement, they moved on to whatever the next office was. And he was off in the back taking pictures. And he decided to do a photo shoot right next to me. And I was paying more attention to the photo shoot than I was at what was going on the dais. And what he was doing was he was in one of those loud shirts. And he placed the palm of his hand in between two of the buttons on the shirt, and he had the person taking the photograph kind of at a distance, and he placed his hand in between the buttons on his shirt and was staring off into the distance for the photos, like something Napoleon would do for a painting. And I thought to myself, that's a guy I'm going to vote for. So for the U.S. Senate, I'm voting for Mark Moiser. It's 2:52. This is Talk Radio 790 KABC. It's 2:56 on this Jimmy Buffett Friday on the John Phillips Show, Talk Radio 790 KABC. Well, it's been quite a day. We went through the ballot, and I told you who I'm voting for. Just to review, for governor, I'm voting for Michael Schellenberger. For lieutenant governor, I'm voting for Angela Jacobs. For treasurer, I'm going for Fiona Ma. For attorney general, I'm going for Eric Early. For insurance commissioner, I'm going for Greg Conlon. For controller, Lonnie Chen. Mayor of Los Angeles, Rick Caruso. DA in Orange County, Todd Spitzer. And for LA County Board of Supervisors, Roxanne Hoag. When Randy gets back, maybe we'll put that on the website somewhere, because I don't know how to do that, and he does. We'll try to get that ready for you. I hope everyone has a wonderful weekend. The heat is back. If you're in Orange County, stay away from those fires. I know they're burning down homes right and left in Laguna Niguel, so stay safe out there. Enjoy the weekend, everyone, and we'll see you all on Monday at noon for another live and local edition of The John Phillips Show right here on Talk Radio 790 KABC.
The countdown is on for the 2024 NFL Draft, presented by Bud Light, live from Detroit, and you can attend in person for free.
Welcome to the NFL Draft.
See the next NFL stars and experience the ultimate NFL Fan Festival, featuring live concerts, interactive games, player autographs, and more. The NFL Draft, presented by Bud Light, April 25th through 27th. Visit NFL.com/draft access to register for free entry today.